believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The Two-Way Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to have you listening in. I want to thank RJ for yet another fine show. So, where are we at today? Well, first of all, I want to thank Stacy Nelson from the Apple Tree Project calling in yesterday. We spoke at length yesterday, and we're actually looking to make that kind of a regular segment, actually. I was so impressed with the Appleseed Project, the way that it's gone. And really, they only started doing these back in, I think, 2005 or 2006. So really, the whole program, the whole Appleseed program, is in its infancy. It's only 3 or 4 years old, and their goal is to double every year, and they've been achieving that or coming awfully close to it based on the numbers that Stacy was telling me yesterday. And I got to tell you, I am really behind it. It gives a good idea of the history of this country back when we were just colonists and answering to the throne of England. When everything came, when push came to shove, and it turned into the Revolutionary War, who was it who actually fought? How did they fight? What were their mindsets? And how did this country actually come around? How was it actually conceived when it came to the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederacy, the Articles of the Congressional, whatever the hell it is. The predecessor, I'm trying to think of it offhand because I didn't bring my notes with me today. The predecessor to the Constitution. The Federalist Papers, pardon me. And they give you the whole stream of this throughout the class, a little bit of history, a little of information, and plenty of opportunity to learn how to properly shoot a rifle, which is great. And if nothing else, just for learning good, solid positions and proper breath control, everything. For if you're a hunter, good positions from standing, sitting, kneeling, prone, just all around excellent stuff. And a lot of people who have been shooting rifles for a long time have never really had this sort of formalized training. And I got to tell you guys, 2 days and $70 is a great way to go. So if you have an opportunity, go to appleseedinfo.org and check it out and look and see where they're going to be. They're going to be somewheres in your area, somewheres close, sometime in the next few months, I'm sure. Go check it out. Even if you only go for the first day, day one will give you all of the different positions, the things to look for, basically how to diagnose yourself, and here's the real beauty of it. How to diagnose other shooters, how to help other shooters, some of the verbiage to be able to articulate how to train somebody else into these different positions and get the other shooters in your life that you can have an influence with and get them squared away. So check out the Appleseed Project, appleseedinfo.org. Get tuned up on that. Sign up for a class. Go out there with a buddy. Go out there with a family member. If you have kids that are old enough to shoot, take them with you. Go out there with a chipmunk or a 10/22 or something like that. But get people involved and check this out. Again, if you've been shooting your whole life and you've never had any sort of formalized training or anything, this is almost informalized formal training. It's a laid back atmosphere and it's really, really effective. We got plenty more coming up for you today, so stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, Don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3. Listen to the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, I'm going to read to you a story called Obama Administration Criminalizes Gun Ownership. Okay, in early America, a gun was an essential part of survival. In fact, owning a gun and knowing how to use it was considered an obligation to oneself as well as one's family and community. The people, in many respects, were responsible for their own self-defense from the very beginning of when this land was settled. The gun was considered then, as now, a tool. When it was a tool of freedom and survival, that's the way it was considered. With this tool, the early settlers were better able to put food on the table and protect their families and communities from dangers that were all around. Today, it is no less a tool of freedom. It's a tool of freedom from becoming the victim of a home invasion. It's a tool of freedom on the streets from rapes and muggings and wanton violence that is so pervasive in our country today. Having a loaded 12-gauge shotgun next to your bed gives you a feeling of security. Now, I would not want to have it any other way. Knowing your wife knows how to use a 12-gauge shotgun eases your mind, even especially during those times when she's home alone. Firearms are also a recreational tool for the shooting sportsman and are still used in the 21st century to put meat on the table, some for pleasure and others out of necessity. If you don't believe us, then simply go north to Alaska or some other part of our nation where still today people living in remote areas are dependent on the firearms that they own to provide themselves food. Being able to do so gives a person a sense of independence from our techno world and reminds us of another time in our history. I remember being invited to a friend's home for supper to partake for a duck dinner. My friend was very proud of the duck on the table, and I enjoyed listening to him talk about his hunting experience as much as I enjoyed the meal and hospitality. Cora Weiss is one of those people that hate such things as the Second Amendment. She's a career peacenik and president of the UN affiliate The Hague for Peace. While addressing the UN in June of 2000, she said, quote, "There are only three documents that you need to be informed. An informed, effective member of an organized civil society. The Charter of the United Nations, the International Declaration of Human Rights, and the Hague Agenda of Peace and Justice for the 21st Century." End quote. Did you notice she didn't mention the Declaration of Independence or the U.S. Constitution? Weiss belongs to those that do not believe ordinary citizens should have the right to arm themselves. They want us to all surrender our weapons in the name of peace. Here's a history lesson. What happened in Rwanda in 94 when the UN disarmed the Tutsis and then supported the government genocide? Governments disarm their population solely for the purpose to easily enforce their tyrannical policies without fear of revolt from the peasants. Just look to the Bolsheviks, the Nazis, and the Khmer Rouge. He continues, "My wife has Cherokee blood in her veins. She is very sensitive to the subject of people being able to defend themselves. Ask the Native Americans what they would tell their grandfathers if they could when the federal government tells your people that you must disarm. Disarming only means one thing, and that is surrender. It means you must submit to a power greater than you. A conquering army always demands the weapons of the defeated. The liberals want to disarm Americans for our own good, but before you can do that, they'll have to rewrite the history books and purge from our collective memories what history has taught us about what happens to a people when they give up their ability to defend themselves." Dr. Susanna Hupp is a survivor of the tragedy that unfolded at the Lubby's Cafeteria in Killeen, Texas in 1991. A madman drove his truck through a plate glass window of the restaurant, exited the truck, and began shooting people at random. Her parents were among the victims that day. Her testimony is sobering and effective. 2 years after the shooting, she testified before Congress about the day and how upset she was at the time that under fire, she did not have the right to carry a handgun to defend herself or her family. If we allow the government to outlaw in incremental steps the right to gun ownership, then only the criminal elements will possess them. I know that is an old argument, but it is no less legitimate today as when it was first made many years ago. Do free Americans want to live in a country, in a world where only the government and criminals have firearms? I believe our forefathers would have warned us against such a thing as this. They would also tell us it is incumbent upon the generations to make certain our freedoms and liberties are protected. They understood what it was like to live under a tyrannical government, a government that would have continued to apply pressure and take away liberties had it not been for the brave colonists that stood up for themselves and said, no more. This is why there's a Second Amendment. In England and Australia, gun ownership has become increasingly difficult. I have provided, here it shows a link. We're not going to be able to get into that on the radio. Where the common man and woman again and again not, let's see. In this video, the common man warns against, again and again, not to let this happen in these two countries, what happened in the U.S., being Australia and England. We need to heed their warnings now before it is too late. Mr. Obama's nominee to run the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration, otherwise known as OSHA, has a public record of anti-gun sentiments. David Michaels is a George Washington University professor and the chief of the Project of Science Project on Scientific Knowledge and Public Policy. The organization is funded in part by George Soros, who's the biggest anti-liberty, anti-gun SOB walking the planet today. Michaels is proposing a workplace safety regulation, which would prohibit law-abiding gun owners from carrying their weapons into their places of employment or even on the property at all, including the parking lot, where he is advocating that gun ownership and the carrying of legally registered guns is a public health menace. Now, folks, you remember that I told you, watch out for the public health outcry. Also remember, what are the three places most likely to be the victim of a mass shooting? Well, one of them is work. So he's trying to disarm us there. According to Walter Olson at overlayered.com, quote, "That's by no means irrelevant to the agenda of an agency like OSHA, because once you start viewing private gun ownership as a public health menace, it begins to seem logical to use the powers of government to urge or even require employers to forbid workers from possessing guns on the company's premises, up to and including parking lots, ostensibly for the protection of co-workers." End quote. This is not the first time Michaels has been outspoken on the subject of gun control. In 2007, he condemned proposals in both Georgia and Florida that would have allowed employees to carry their guns to and from their places of employment for protection. Michaels is expected to bring major changes if approved to head OSHA. Michaels wrote OSHA, quote, "badly needs a change in direction and philosophy," end quote. And he thinks it should include a campaign to change the workplace culture of safety. If Michaels is approved and he implements the changes he is expected to do, this would affect many, many businesses. Now, this writer continues by saying, I personally know of two business owners that keep firearms in their offices for protection of themselves, their employees, and their property because of the area their businesses are located in. Gun shop owners, for the most part, wear their handguns on their bodies for obvious reasons. The list goes on and on. Many states have their own laws concerning the issues, and some may think that state law would trump the federal laws, but this is not the case. According to the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, federal law always trumps state law when the two laws are in conflict with each other. So Michaels could write a new regulation stating that it's illegal for any business to allow guns in the workplace or in the parking lots. And for what it's worth, Attorney General Eric Holder supported the Washington, D.C. ban on handguns before the Supreme Court overturned the case. So, I don't know if all of you are familiar with Atlas Shrugged, but this is exactly what's going on. This was written by an author, female, by the name of Ayn Rand. Ayn Rand wrote about how the government decided to redistribute wealth, make everything equal for everybody, because getting down to the lowest common denominator, the average slug in America was who they needed to support. Even got so far as to assigning jobs. So if you have a mill, you've got a place of employment, the government would assign what job somebody's, where somebody's going to work and what their job's going to be. And of course, they knew they were going to be there. They couldn't get fired. They weren't going to quit. So what did they do? They did nothing. So the government wants to see something happen. The government's going to do it. That is not the job of the government. The government's job is not to interfere with us. It is not a public health issue. They want to start dealing with public health issues. Maybe they should start with some basic idea of getting the medical community to stop killing 300,000 people a year due to medical negligence. Because there's certainly nowhere near that, not even close, dealing with guns. More hypocrisy after the break, so stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes.
Of course, billionaire anti-gun zealot Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York City, recently appeared on Meet the Press, and when host David Gregory asked him, how can you muster the clout and the power to take on the NRA? Bloomberg raised some eyebrows with his response. This is what he said. If you look at what the real numbers are, I think we can pull together here and raise enough money to take on the issues and explain to Congress this is just an outrage, according to Bloomberg. Now, having called your Second Amendment rights an outrage, Bloomberg went on to add, I'm going to not only do that myself, I'm going to ask plenty of other people to do it. If you want to beat the NRA, you have to go out and get your message out, and it costs money to do that. But not all is well in the ranks of Bloomberg supporters. His anti-gun lobbying group, Mayors Against Illegal Guns, or MAG, is in a state of turmoil. That may explain why Bloomberg has had to provide more than 95% of the funding for MAG out of his own personal fortune. Bloomberg proudly cites the number of mayors in his group, but at least 25 members of his groups are not mayors at all, and another five have already either lost their re-election campaigns or retired. The superstitious might wonder if joining Bloomberg's group brings bad luck to its members. But listen to the rest of this information before you decide, because it's just the beginning. There's much more. Nine members of the group, all of them actual mayors, or at least for the moment, were arrested or indicted on criminal charges. These include the personal misdeeds of corrupt politicians at the lowest level of government bribery, corruption, and money laundering. The list of charges hanging over Bloomberg's members also include conspiracy, tax fraud, possession of child pornography, and sexual assault on a child. Criminal cases involving five other members of Bloomberg's core have already been completed, with the mayors in question convicted of the charges against them. Again, we have the garden variety of government corruption, bribery, extortion, and conspiracy. But we also see charges for assault and even assaulting a police officer. That particular ex-mayor, Kwame Kilpatrick of Detroit, faced 10 felony charges in two cases before he made a plea deal. He's been erased from MAG's official membership roster, but is still counted when Bloomberg proudly states that over 450 mayors from more than 40 states have joined his group. He doesn't talk about how many have left his group and political office in disgrace. But corruption charges and criminal trials aren't the only reasons mayor have resigned from May. More than 40 other mayors have resigned from the group when they were made aware of its true legislative agenda. Oldsmar Township, New Jersey Mayor Harry Moore resigned his membership in a letter to Bloomberg, which said in part, "I joined your coalition because of its purported purpose to combat the criminal acquisition and misuse of guns, which is a goal shared by all Americans. Regrettably, it has become abundantly clear to me that you are using this coalition of mayors to advance a hidden agenda of bringing lawsuits against members of the firearms industry and spreading anti-gun propaganda." Moore also protested Bloomberg's illegal sting operations, which jeopardized the safety of actual law enforcement personnel. Quote, the Department of Justice warned you to refrain from these actions. I do not want the blood of a police officer on my hands so that you can advise your anti-gun legislation campaign, wrote Moore. Another resignation came from Mayor Marlene Arniski of Walton Hills, Ohio. Her letter forcefully stated, quote, "Mayor, you and your coalition of allies have misrepresented yourselves to the mayors of America and its citizens." And closed by saying, quote, "I can only hope that you will see my departure and the recent departure of other mayors from your coalition as a sign that things must change. We're all on the same side when it comes to stopping criminals from getting guns. Where you lose me is your true quest to end firearms ownership and destroy a lawful American industry." Now, what we have is Bloomberg, a multi-billionaire. If you're doing business with any sort of corporation under Bloomberg, stop. Do some research. Find out where he's got his fingers. And if there's any way possible to stop doing business with any sort of Bloomberg affiliate, do it. If you know any companies that are advertising with Bloomberg, and you're happen to be involved with that, find out if the people that are your supervisors, bosses, whatever in that company, know that he's anti-gun, and see if they share that. Here's the deal. Bloomberg is doing his very best to get guns out of the hands of people. He's breaking laws, going around the country, doing these different stings, misrepresenting himself, putting all this money in there, and he's out there lying. Here's the thing. Because the man is worth billions, all of the other elected officials want to suckle up to him so that they can get some of that money. But he is not being prosecuted. He is not being charged for breaking the law. So yet another, again, it's another episode where you get somebody who's an elected official and happens to have a lot of money, and they are somehow now above the law. When is this going to stop? This guy went so far as to have the City Council of New York reverse the decision of a two-term limit so he could spend billions to get elected to a third term to carry on this crusade. When's it going to end? Folks, stay tuned. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
A lot of questions have come up in light of the shooting a couple weeks ago at Fort Hood. Why is it that this gunman was able to get off so many shots, kill and injure so many people on a military base where they teach people to get guns and shoot other people? It's because the soldiers on military bases are disarmed and have been that way for the better part of 20 years. It's been 16 years 1993, when Clinton instituted that. Now, time after time, public murder sprees occur in what they consider to be gun-free zones, public places where people are not legally able to carry guns. The list is long, including massacres at Virginia Tech and Columbine High School, along with many others. And the slaughter at Fort Hood Army Base in Texas was no different, except that one man bears responsibility for the ugly reality that the men and women charged with defending America were deliberately left defenseless when a terrorist opened fire. Now, among President Clinton's first acts upon taking office in 1993 was to disarm U.S. service members on military bases. In March of 93, keep in mind he took office in January, so 2 months later, the Army imposed regulations forbidding military personnel from carrying their personal firearms and making it almost impossible for commanders to issue firearms to soldiers in the U.S. for personal protection. For the most part, only military police regularly carry firearms on base, and their presence is stretched thin because they are also deployed in war zones. Because of Clinton, terrorists would face more return fire if they attacked a Texas Walmart than what the gunmen face at Fort Hood, home of the heavily armored and feared 1st Cavalry Division, but that doesn't make any difference because none of them were allowed to carry guns on the base. Thank you, Mr. Clinton. That's why a civilian policewoman from off base was the one whose marksmanship ended Nidal Malik Hassan's rampage. Everyone wants to keep people safe. And no one denies that Clinton thought that these were good intentions. The problem is that law-abiding citizens, law-abiding good citizens, not criminals, are the ones who obey those laws. Bans end up disarming potential victims and not criminals. Rather than making places safe for victims, we unintentionally make them safe for criminals, or in this case, realistically, a terrorist. The wife of one of the soldiers shot at Fort Hood understands all too well. In an interview on CNN, anchor, what was his name? John Roberts? He asked the lady, her name was Mandy Foster, how she felt about her husband's upcoming deployment to Afghanistan. And this is what Mandy Foster said. She said, quote, "At least he's safe there and he can fire back, right?" Well, it's hard to believe that we don't trust soldiers with guns on a military base when we trust these very same men to go overseas and fight. Clinton's deadly rule even disarmed officers, the most trusted members of the military charged with leading enlisted soldiers into combat. Six of the dead and wounded had commissions. Most people understand that guns deter criminals. Research also shows that the presence of more guns limits the damage mass murders can unleash. A major factor in determining how many people are harmed by these killers is the time that elapses between the launch of an attack and when someone, soldier, civilian, law enforcement, whomever, arrives on the scene with a gun to end the attack. All the public shootings in the United States in which more than three people have been killed have occurred in places where concealed handguns have been banned. Let me say that to you again. All the public shootings in the United States in which more than three people have been killed have occurred in places where concealed handguns have been banned. 13 dead bodies in a Texas morgue are the ultimate fruit of gun control illogic, in which guns are so feared that government regulation even tries to keep them out of the hands of trained soldiers. With the stroke of a pen, Obama can end Clinton's folly and allow U.S. soldiers to protect themselves. Because we clearly cannot protect our soldiers from harm, the least we owe them is the right to protect themselves. I find it very interesting that the statistic exists that any time more than three people have been killed in a mass shooting is because it's in an area where people cannot carry concealed firearms for self-protection. If you were hell-bent to go on a rampage, and all your goal was to start shooting the hell out of people, where would you go? Well, you would probably find a target-rich environment. It's like this. If you're going to send in your stealth bombers to bomb another country, what are you going to hit? Well, you're going to hit the most valuable targets for your agenda, right? You're not just going to go randomly bomb stuff in the country, which means the same thing. If these people that are going to be hell-bent to go out and just shoot places, they're just not going to walk out their front door and start shooting. They're going to find a place where there's going to be a lot of people, and it's far less likely that they're going to get shot. Now, if you're in a place, say it's a business that says, oh, you know, no weapons. You can't come in this mall with a gun. You can't come into this workplace with a gun. You can't come into this place of business with a gun. Can't come onto this campus with a gun. Well, the one who does go on there with the gun, guess what? He's probably the only one there. To not trust people, which is really what this is, it's where the government or a business owner, whatever, they don't trust people. If you don't trust the people, who do you trust? We know we can't trust the government. We absolutely, positively know. And it's not even deep down that we know. It's right on the surface. We know we cannot trust the government. A politician has a hidden agenda, and we know this every time they do one single thing. There is one thing that all politicians have as a tell that they're trying to pull one over on us, and they have a hidden agenda. And I'll tell you how to figure out exactly what that tell is. Okay? You know when a politician has a hidden agenda and they're trying to pull one over on you, every single time they do this one very thing, and that's talk. Every time they open their mouth. Almost across the board, you could probably safely say 99% of the time that anybody who's any sort of government official or elected official has a hidden agenda and is trying to pull one over on you, you know that they're in the process of trying to do that when they speak. Just the way it goes. They're untrustworthy. And if they tell you, look, we don't want you to have guns in this place, this place, this place, this place, and now maybe this OSHA guy is going to say, oh yeah, no guns in any workplace. Hey, you know what? I got to tell you something. If I own a business, it is entirely up to me what happens inside my business when it comes to things such as the safety of my employees. And if I'm going to tell them, look, you guys go through this amount of training or, you know, you come up with a certificate, you got a CCW, yes, you can carry. I make that decision, not OSHA. And if OSHA were to want to come onto my property to tell me that, you know what I would do? I would throw them out. I would literally throw these people from OSHA out my business front door. Maybe even out the back door into the alley. Say, you know something? At least here in Nevada, through NRS 207.200, you are trespassed from this building. And you have to get a court order to come back on. And if you do get a court order, I'm going to file an injunction. This is my business, and you are not going to try to implement any sort of regulation that has to deal with the safety and welfare of my people from an outside attack. Your regulation, your authority, stems from what happens within the manufacturing or business environment here, not from regulating any sort of outside attack. So, head out the back door. Try not to clunk your head on the pavement on the way out. That's just me. That's my feeling on this. I believe, as they say, they have different zero tolerance policies or gun-free zones. I believe we should start gun-filled zones. This neighborhood is a gun-filled zone. And let it be known. Imagine that, if you had your neighborhood watch, right? And it's funny, because there's some people that are just so anti-gun. It makes you want to put a sign in your yard with an arrow pointing to your neighbor's yard that says, my neighbor is anti-gun, and his home is a gun-free zone. Mine is not, but I'm going to honor my neighbor's desire that if you were to break in, I will not come defend him or his property to support his position on a gun-free zone. How about that? Now turn that around. Of course, you know, that's one of these sorts of things that goes around on the internet. Turn this around. This neighborhood is a gun-filled zone. What you basically have is, for the most part, not a neighborhood watch, but a neighborhood militia. Maybe that should be a change. Maybe someone should start, instead of a neighborhood watch program around the country, they should have a neighborhood militia. So everybody, you know, you check out, you know, see how things are. The whole neighborhood gets trained, and everybody's up on watching for bad guys. If the bad guy sees neighborhood militia, well, they're happy to stay away. It's interesting, actually, when you have the neighborhood watch signs, a lot of people believe that that's as good as putting like an ADT security sign or a, you know, secure zone alarmed house sign in your front yard. You know, sometimes those signs work, sometimes they don't. There's been a number of burglars that enjoy finding the neighborhood watch signs in an area that's had it for a long time. Because much like everything else, neighborhood watch starts off with a vigor, and then it just peters off and people just keep the signs up. And it's usually a pretty easy place to get into. Because they figure the signs are a deterrent. They don't have to do anything. Imagine if it was a gun-filled zone. I want to talk just a little bit about more of this government hype and give you a perfect example of how it's all a bunch of BS. Now, I remember 2 or 3 weeks ago, Obama came out and declared a national, emergency, I think it was, based on the swine flu. The CDC says, quote, many millions of Americans have caught the pandemic swine flu virus since it first appeared in April. Okay, 7 months ago. Many millions. Now, let me give you an idea of what many means. A couple is two, a few is four, several is seven, many is 10. Okay? So if we're around, say, 10 million people have had this swine flu, you know how many people have died from it? 4,000. 4,000 people have died from swine flu. Okay? Out of roughly 10 million who have had it. Okay? So 4,000 divided by 10 million equals 0.0004%. That means I guess it would break down to 1 out of 25,000 people die from swine flu. If 25,000 people got it. Now, I live in a town of about 40,000. Let's say that it was bigger. Let's say it was 50,000. And absolutely everyone in the town of Pahrump, Nevada got swine flu. Two would die from it. Now, that sounds like probably one of the single most harmless things to ever come out. But yet, we have these vaccines, these inoculations that they're trying to give to us. Why? Well, they've only got a hidden agenda when their lips are flapping. Don't you find that interesting? 1 out of 25,000, roughly, succumb to swine flu. Now, that is less than the common cold. Now, they say the young and the elderly are most at risk, which is the same for anything. I mean, the young and the elderly are most at risk for anything, be it being involved in a car accident, falling down, getting the common cold, having a broken limb. Okay, they suffer more because they're young and undeveloped, or older and starting to deteriorate. Pardon the lack of term, deteriorate. When it comes to these sicknesses, 1 in 25,000? Wow. You know, I'll take those odds. I've got a better chance of dying on an airplane, probably. I'm just guessing. I don't know. 1 in 25,000. Ridiculous to me. They're actually calling this some sort of pandemic, some national emergency. Well, the question is why? Well, right now, the answer to that question lies in trying to push through all of this healthcare. And within this healthcare thing, we talked earlier about this whole thing with OSHA wanting to call it a national health care or safety issue, gun violence, right? Well, a lot more people die in car accidents every year. Why aren't we regulating that? A lot more people die at the hands of a physician's care unnecessarily. Why aren't we looking into that? It's interesting to be able to draw these things where they're trying to take the health insurance company, the health monitoring, the physical well-being of Americans, and find a way to take that and take away your guns. Imagine this. They pass this healthcare reform and they say, due to the national healthcare numbers that we've put out there, and since we're regulating healthcare, what we're saying is, you're going to lose your mandated healthcare coverage if you have any firearms in your home. You have to have the coverage, but you can't do this. How about if they use that for smoking, if you're a smoker? You have to have health coverage, but you're going to lose it if you smoke or drink or take prescriptions other than, you know, whatever. Stay tuned, guys. More to come. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, on 2A Radio.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, guys, just want to give you a couple of updates here. I have my laptop. I've told you the woes of stories of that thing being a piece of garbage. Got it to a guy who's a computer professional. He's a listener. He's a shooter. He lives in Vegas. He's going to try and get that thing working. My website editing software was on that computer, so I'm trying to find a copy of it so I can get up there and actually do some things on my website, such as update some of the information coming together for the 2A Radio handgun course coming in March and get up those recipes I told you about with the Thanksgiving turkey and the Miles Standish stuffing, the two finest things you could ever eat on any given Thanksgiving. So I intend to have those up sometime today, hell or high water. If I've got to get my web host to put down whatever he's doing and transfer it to him to have him put it up, I like to do it myself. I don't like to bother him with those things. I'm capable of doing it with the software. I just don't have the software. So one way or another, I'm going to try to get those up today. The very latest it'll be tomorrow. But that Obama treaty page, we've sent those things off. It's going to replace that. So we're going to put up those recipes for the Thanksgiving time. I highly encourage you to look those things up. If you're going to be entertaining, doing Thanksgiving, whatever it is, it looks like a lot of work, but I got to tell you, it's not nearly as much work as it seems, but it's absolutely fantastic stuff. If you happen to have a place like a Whole Foods type of market, like one of these big organic grocery stores, that's where you're going to find some of the little ingredients for brining your turkey, like juniper berries. There's some juniper berries to crush up and put in there. Certainly, you can adapt the brine a little bit, but try it the way it is. Of course, I've made a couple of different little changes on that recipe when it comes to some of the cook time based on my own experience. Really, the cook time wasn't quite long enough on some of the things. The turkey was coming out with a little bit of red juice in it the first couple times. So I had to put it back in. So I've got it all dialed in. That's what's going to go up. And that's my gift to you, the listening audience. I appreciate that. That'll be by far the best bird you've ever had. Even if you go with the frozen Butterball or the frozen no-name brand that's 39 cents a pound, it's going to be the best 39 cent a pound turkey you ever bought and cooked and ate if you use this recipe. It's going to be that much more delicious if you actually go out and you buy the fresh, free-range sort of turkey thing going on. So That's going to go up. Everybody's got some great ideas for some of the other things. You know, everybody's got their own recipes going on. I encourage you to try this, as well as the Miles Standish stuffing. Again, if you're not sure if you want to eat these things, you can go out and you can try this recipe with a small Cornish game hen and try it. You can also make like a quarter size of the stuffing before actually Thanksgiving if you want to try it. Trust me, however, I wouldn't steer you wrong on this gun thing. I'm not going to steer you wrong on these recipes for Thanksgiving either. I'm going to give you that. There's been a little bit of a delay in getting the dates set for the Second Amendment Radio handgun course in March. However, I did make quite a bit of headway over the weekend, so we should have that sewed up coming up soon. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Folks, stay tuned for the Global Research Hour coming up next, followed by the Ernie Hancock Show. I'll be back tomorrow.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.